So, but on the other hand, I'd be a lousy advocate for like phones because I literally don't care.
Ted, thanks for joining me. Ted is the founder and CEO of a word-of-mouth marketing agency in Atlanta, Georgia, called Fizz. Ted, welcome into the podcast.
David, I'm so psyched to be here. Thanks for having me.
You have no idea how happy I am to talk to you and to have you on. It's like a word-of-mouth reunion. I had Bob Troia on last episode, so that's fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's... So I want to say thank you again. I said this to you privately, but I want people to know this publicly that you know you and I have known each other for a while. And when during the days of WOMA and you know, I worked for someone else and, you know, you were one of the people that helped kick me in the ass, so to speak, it's about starting up and have given me really good advice over the years. So I wouldn't be living on a tropical island tanned and living the life that I live now without that kick in the pants. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, you owe me. I'm going to need, you know, pool, ocean view and pina colada, you know, until I fall over when I come down and visit. So
oh, absolutely.
I'm just telling you.
I'll have a nice stock of various rums and fresh fruit. And yeah, we'll have a good time.
I'm ready. We'll just colada it up.
So speaking of that, now I'll get to that story in a minute. And I mentioned Bob Troia, and we met through WOMA, which is the Word of Mouth Marketing Association. And it was actually kind of a crazy time because the industry was moving fast and social media was starting to become a thing. But it hadn't, when we first started like talking about word of mouth, it wasn't really much of a thing. And it was fun to be in a room with people like you who got it. And, you know, I actually got to the point, if you remember, where I ran for the board of directors to be the president of the board of directors and ended up losing by one vote. So as someone who was in it, I obviously have my own perspective, but what do you think I was thinking at that moment? Because I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I think the person it was David Witt from General Mills versus me. Like,
so I think David, I think you've always been very passionate about this. And I think for all of us in marketing, who are those people who are listening and even those that aren't, who are, you know, you see the future and you're ready to get there. And, you know, it's our job to bring along everybody else. And, you know, some of us have less fear of the downside than others. And so I think all those people that were early on at WOMA, like, you know, the 10 or 15 of us, you know, in the very beginning, I think we had very little fear of the future because I think we were excited about the future and we saw what the future could be. And, you know, just from my perspective, you know, just personally, I thought it was really interesting. I, you know, in 1999, I'm sitting there looking at the data. And I'm like, wow, broadcast is dying. And it looks like things like Google and TiVo are getting adopted without any broadcast. How does that happen? And then it turns out how it happens, particularly in North America, is one person tells a story to somebody else. And when they go and try that thing or that service, that product, when the story matches the experience, they buy it. And 10% of those people will tell a significant number of other people. And they tell two friends and so on and so on. And then eventually you get Google or you get Tito's Vodka or you get Croc Shoes or you get any of these other things that, you know, are an overnight success that take 5 or 6 years to get there.
Yep. Yeah, the word of mouth piece, I started looking at it early on around how conversations were happening online. And trying to correlate that to some of the research that I had read about how people share information. And it was kind of like, and I know there's the whole debate with like offline versus online, all those things. And I think in today, for someone you know, I think it's different, obviously, than someone you don't know is putting out buy my whatever on Instagram. I think it's just a different thing. And the numbers are not the same as they are for offline marketing. But I thought that, so I do want to talk more about word of mouth and specifically your books. Ted is an author who's got a book. It's called, I'm going to do this really quick. Before I tell people the name of your book, I went to Goodreads because I wanted to make sure that you didn't put something out that I hadn't seen. Because that happens sometimes, right? Someone writes a book and then they put a second one out. Maybe you don't see it or whatever.
Yeah. Nope. So I have one book and one book only, brother.
Oh, man. Well, I was going to ask you, I was going to do a rapid fire round.
And rapid fire.
Yeah. So ready, rapid fire round. You tell me yes or no. Did you write this book? Because Goodreads says there's a book by Ted Wright. Same spelling, same everything. Okay. So book.
So the question is, did I write the book?
Did you write this? I'm going to give you the name of a book. You tell me if you wrote it. You ready?
All right, go.
All right, Hot Babes 2, Pictures Book.
I don't think anybody wrote that. That's a coloring book, isn't it? I believe it's a coloring
book. There's a book on Goodreads by Ted Wright that says Hot Babes 2, Pictures Book. Book number two, so that's a no. Book number two, Family Disaster Preparedness.
I did not write that. I'm right. Living that instead. Thank you for asking.
Book number three is Fizz, Harness the Power of Word of Mouth Marketing to Drive Brand Growth.
Ding, ding, ding. All right, the winner. Although I wish I'd written those other two.
The last one I was going to get to was called Bomb Dog Mitch, Another Box of Dogs. Which I didn't think would be you anyway, but
that I don't even I can't even comment. I don't even know
what that is. So I do want, let's talk about your book that is not called Bomb Dog Mitch, and tell people and business owners. I want people to understand word of mouth marketing because people automatically jump to social media, and that's not necessarily it. Those are just tools. So can you tell people about word of mouth marketing so they have a clear understanding as to what it is?
All right. So what it is, word of mouth marketing is organizing people who like to share stories with other people and giving them a very easy, digestible story to tell about your product or service and that they'll share with others. And the reason you want to go and do all that work is that whatever target group you're working with, 10% of those people have what we refer to in our shop as an advocate personality. And that advocate personality has three different parts to it. They like to try new things because they're new. So they're always checking out stuff like what's happening in this space that I love.
Yep.
They love to share stories with their friends. And when I say love, these 10% of people, on average, their story will get shared in excess of 40,000 times in a single year within their friend network. The other 90% of us, whether you're living in the territory, on the mainland, wherever you're living, the other 90% of us, our stories are shared on average 6 times. So 10% of the population, their stories are shared in excess of 40,000 times. The rest of us schlubs, our story is shared 6 times. The other third piece to remember about advocates is that they are intrinsically motivated. They do not want your money in order to share your story. They are looking for information. They are looking for story. They are looking for things that meet three categories. They're authentic, they're interesting, and they're relevant. So if your story, it can be authentic, it can be interesting to other people, and it can be relevant to at least one other person, then you have a real good shot at being able to create a word-of-mouth marketing program for your products and services.
So as it relates to that, and do you think that one of the bigger problems or mistakes that people make is that they think that they understand their audience, or is that their stories are actually interesting or relevant? Which when you see a mistake in the space, which of those categories, or is it all three that they falter?
So David, sorry about that. I stepped on you. I apologize. I think everybody really needs to think about, you know, word of mouth marketing is a triangle. On one side of the triangle, put the word story. On another side of the triangle, put the word target. And on the third part of the triangle, put the word goal. And right in the middle, write activations. And this gives you the visual answer to David's question. which is when word of mouth doesn't work, is it story or target? And the reason that is an equilateral triangle where all sides are even is because all three of those things are equally important. So failure is not a failure of the story is bad or the target is bad. Failure comes when the story doesn't match the target, right? So if your target is lower income, then talking about speed or talking about value might not be as important as talking about price. Or if your target is people that are, you know, over 75, something that's going to last for the next 50 years, that's probably not a really great story for you, right? It might be more something that is more immediate. So making sure that goal, target, and story all line up together, that is the critical element. So for those of you who are listening, you know, don't pay me and certainly don't pay David. Do it yourself and just think about how you can make those the story be as interesting to the target as possible. And again, you know, how you make the story really a quality one is you think about it with the acronym AIR, A-I-R. Needs to be authentic, needs to be interesting, and it needs to be relevant.
Yeah, I think one of the big mistakes that I've seen over the years, I'm sure you've seen, is when someone says that it has AIR, but the target is themselves. and that's never, they forget about who they're actually targeting, and they put themselves in the center of the equation, and it never works out.
So it's so funny you should mention that, David. So there's an apocryphal story out there where the former CMO of Coca-Cola is talking to the CEO of Coca-Cola. And that CEO of Coca-Cola said that his wife did not like one of their new commercials. And he said, okay, yes, sir, that'll be great. And they pulled it off. And the next time the CMO saw the CEO's wife, he said, hey, can you remind me what your address is? And she goes, why? She says, because I have 11.6 million cases of Coca-Cola to send to your house, because that's how many I was going to sell from this ad. And because you decided you didn't like it, I had to pull it. So for all of you that remember, I think you focus group of one, that's what David's talking about, like selling to yourself. Selling to yourself is really important as long as there's a lot of yourselves out there. It's better to make sure that not only do you like it, but that other people like it, so you don't have to end up, you know, making 10,000 loaves of banana bread on your recipe, and then you have to buy them all because nobody actually likes your recipe of banana bread.
Well, this is not a banana bread story, but one of my favorite stories was that I actually got to judge this back in the day when there were awards being given for word of mouth marketing case studies. And there were different levels, I think bronze, silver, gold, and maybe platinum, but there were different levels under which as judges, we had to rate each case study. And the case study that I was, of all the things I read that day, I said, this is the only one that number one is true word of mouth marketing. And this is the only one that actually sold product. And it was the chocolate milk case study. And I know this study. I know the background on it regarding this. There was a study, right, at Indiana University. Well, I'll let you tell it. But there was a whole thing involved. And then there was the outcome, which was you getting a phone call from Kroger, I believe, right?
We did.
All right, so let's back it up and let's hear this one.
So here's the word of mouth marketing story about how we got everybody who's an athlete to drink chocolate milk. So the people who run the trade association that deals with all of dairy called us and said, hey, we'd like to sell more chocolate milk. And we're like, awesome. So we think chocolate milk is wonderfully delicious. So let's talk some more. So we're talking some more and we decide to work together. So, and this is for you all out there that are doing, going to do word of mouth marketing there with yourself. The first thing you do is you want to get all of the information possible about this brand and how, what people think about it. And you're going to take, and you're going to take each individual thing about the brand and you're going to write it up on a big board. And then you're going to go through and you're going to say, scale 1 to 10, how interesting is this particular point? And you're going to take all 600 things you put up on the board and you're going to rank order them. And 10 is the best and 1 is the worst. And when you get done, you're going to have a dozen 10s, and those are the ones you're going to work with. And so one of the things that we found with chocolate milk was we found a study, partially at Indiana University and partially at The Ohio State University. And now you have to say the part or they send you a nasty letter. The Ohio State University. And they found out that chocolate milk is the best thing to drink after working out. And we were like, really, why is that? And so we read the article some more. And it turns out it has the perfect balance of amino acids and proteins. It's 92% water. And it has this naturally occurring chemical compound that makes your muscles feel much better after working out, because the muscle burn that you get from working out a lot is too much lactic acid between your muscle cells, and milk is really great for removing that. So off we go, and we're creating this program, and we go, and we get all this stuff, and we're going out, and we're talking to athletes. And we're talking to athletes, and we're talking to their coaches, and we're talking to their coaches because, you know, one coach can convert 50 athletes, convert 300 athletes, however many. And so we start talking to them. And over time, here on the mainland, chocolate milk started increasing 10, 15, 20% a month. And then it went to a couple 100% a month. And then it really started taking off from there. And so the very end of the story, and this is actually a couple of years of working with this.
Well, I thought the one piece that you didn't mention was the coach in Ohio, right?
So this is the Kroger story, the fun, yep, Kroger story that you wanted. So very end of this, like 18 months into this, we get a phone call from the guy who ran dairy for the largest grocery store chain here on the mainland side of the United States. And he said, Ted, I think we have a problem. And I said, yes, sir. What do you think that is? And he said, do you think kids have figured out how to make drugs out of chocolate milk? And I stopped for a second. I said,
probably.
I don't think so. And then for you, those of you listening in the agency world, you know, immediately I thought, you know, those little rugrats, I hope they didn't, because you don't cost me a client here. And in fact, they hadn't. What had happened was, in the grocery business, you rarely see this happen. So these people would come in just individually and sometimes in big groups, and they would buy 100% in the grocery store of all of one thing and then leave and wouldn't buy anything else. And the only other time in the professional grocery business you had seen that in the United States was with Sudafed, which has the precursor chemicals for making methamphetamines. So the people had just figured out, because they're watching all these security tapes and they're stopping the kids and saying, what are you doing? And the kids are like, I ain't doing nothing. And all these big beefy guys would come in and start buying all of the chocolate milk. So that was it. So sometimes when you're very effective at creating word of mouth marketing program, it will look like you've created, you know, the new greatest thing ever, and everybody has got to go have that. Whether that's Crocs shoes, chocolate milk, Fireball liquor, whatever else is, you know, we've worked on and other people have worked on. That's what happens, is one person tells another. And the reason, David, that it happens like that is because when one person who knows somebody shares their information with somebody else that they know, then that information is 100 times more believed and 10 times more likely to drive trial than if that same information came in broadcast form from the brand to the person hearing the story. So I always like to say, you know, for every one that broadcast can sell, word of mouth can sell 10.
Yep.
More trust. more likely to draw a trial, more success.
I remember there was a part of the program in reading the case study in which it was, who was the influencer, or who are the influencers? As you mentioned, it was the coaches. But I believe your activation was that you went to like the summer meeting or whatever meeting of all the coaches in Ohio. And
we did. That's exactly right, David. So for you that are listening that have not read the WOMA case study, which shame on you, by the way, you just totally do show go do that. So one of the things when you're thinking about target is the best targets are have a couple of have three specific like parts to them. First, they have a pre-existing communication network. So they already are on a text chat. There's a phone tree if you want to be old school about that. They all are on the same blog every day, right? So they're all they have a pre-existing way of talking to each other. Because you don't want to spend money trying to convince somebody to go on this certain platform just to talk to you. The next thing you like is you like it that they all co-locate. They all get together somewhere, either physically or virtually. So you can talk to a lot of people at once. Because only 10% of that group is an advocate, the other 90% are not as effective for you as the 10, but you never know which of the 10, who's in there, who's in that 10%. So you got to go talk to everybody else. So when David brought up that we would go to these coaches meetings, and so particularly for football, in January and February of every year, you get high school football coaches that get together and they spend a couple days talking to each other and also talking to the best college and pro coaches in the United States about how to be a better coach. Basketball coaches do it in the summer, lacrosse coaches do it in the summer, track coaches do it in the spring, whatever their most off-season part of it is. So we go and we are going to these coaches clinics and, you know, and it's everybody else, all the other people in vendors rows, like they're selling weights and they're selling helmets. And we were basically just giving away chocolate milk. And one of the cool things to remember is that people will take free stuff from you. And whether that's free information or that's free stuff. And so we're just giving away chocolate milk. So eventually one of the coaches would come up and they would say, "Hey, why are you giving away chocolate milk?" So when that coach would do that, that coach, he or she sometimes would sit, they are signaling that they're likely to have this advocate personality. Because as we'll remember from early in the podcast, advocates like to try new things, share stories with their friends, and are intrinsically motivated. That thing in the middle, that sharing stories with their friends, that is critically important because in order to share a story, you first got to get the story. And that means these people who are advocate personalities do a great deal of research and are always sucking up information about those products and service categories that they're super interested in. So these people would basically identify themselves as saying, "I'm probably an advocate," even though they didn't really use those words and they didn't really think about that. We would treat them. We would give them as many chocolate milks as they would like to take. Because, of course, they're about sharing the stuff as well as sharing the story. We'd load them up with the story. And by the end of these conferences, like, you know, 2 days into this, we were the talk of the conference because nobody knew that chocolate milk was really that great for you. And they would do some research. People start winning some things that they weren't thinking they were going to win. They gave some of the credit to chocolate milk. People tell two friends and they go to friends and so on and so on. And then you get a national movement that crazily enough is still active today.
Yeah. Clay Thompson and the NBA.
Yeah. 20 years later, after we first started in this, 15 years later, after we started doing this, you go talk to any coach and you say, "Hey coach, what's up with chocolate milk?" They will tell you the story that I just told you. And we wrote the story from a scientific paper. Before that, so scientists did that and just made this discovery, no one knew this fact. And before we got there and saw the science and changed it into a story that just, you know, one coach could tell another coach in less than 30 seconds, nobody did this. It's the same story 15 years later.
Love it. I love it. I've had some successes with programs where it's a similar thing. It's finding the influencer. It's the person who really is going to be the advocate for the brand. And when it happens, I mean, when I worked for at a previous agency, we did it with a hand sanitizer that came out, and the influencer or the advocate was going to be that social mom. And similar story, we put together information for them, gave them some free products, and we didn't want to have to fly it back to New York, so we just loaded up boxes of this stuff in their cars. They went back to their PTA meetings. They went back to their whatever social circles. We're handing the stuff out pre-launch, and the day it came out, it was sold off the shelves. So it's that's an awesome feeling when you have that level of insight and execution, and it all comes together and works. And the fact that there's still to this day, like I said, I just saw you still see ads in 2020 for something 15 years ago that was discovered. So that's just, you know, it's on that Gatorade level of, you know, of not that we advocate Gatorade on this podcast, but chocolate milk's good, Gatorade bad. But it's just awesome to see something that lives on for that long.
It is really fun. It's very gratifying to the team, and it's very gratifying to the client, and it's still get a kick. I'll be at conferences or I'll be doing something, and somebody will say, come up to me after I'm done telling the story, and they're like, my son or my daughter.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, literally, I mean, these people that are coming up to me, you know, probably were in college when we first started doing that, and now they're having kids of their own, and they're athletes, and their coaches are telling them the same thing.
Yeah. I switched with the kids that I train, with my own kids, that I don't do Gatorade. If we just did a workout and we're stopping at the store on the way home, guess what you're getting? You're getting chocolate milk. So it's still
it's a trial. That's good. I love it.
So what I wanted to ask you, because the book's called Fizz and your agency's called Fizz, and when it came to naming the agency, you did a lot of work early on. You mentioned Coca-Cola with beverages, right? That's where the name comes from.
So back in the earliest days, we were called something different. I had a business partner, and he wanted to go his own way, and so we couldn't agree on what to do with the name, and so it just kind of sat there. I own it now, but or at least the URL. But and so we renamed it Fizz. But for those that are listening, you know, the earliest history of our company was that we were doing something that was really, it was super old. I mean, it's word of mouth has been around at least 3,000 years. I mean, it's probably been around longer, but I stopped looking after 3,000 years ago. So what we decided to do, since it was really old and no one had thought about it for 100 years, we said, you can either be a new technology working with something everybody else knows, or you can be a new technology with a new thing that everybody knows, nobody knows about. And we decided that we would be a new idea, but we would be in one particular category. And so there are five different categories we looked at, including movies, video games, and beverages. And those are the top three of the five that came up. And the first client we got was somebody in beverage. And so we just went with beverage. So for the first 5 years of our company, we exclusively did beverages. And then one day, the guy who was the CMO of a super huge computer company saw me give my presentation about our very first client, which was Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, hey, what do you know about video games? And I looked at him and I said, console or PC? And he said, I have come to the right person. And I said, I don't want to tell you what I know about them. Just here, let's go open up my laptop and let's see what I know about them. So I had several games, you know, that were loaded on my laptop and I played them. And so we ended up coming up with this chipset for this super famous company, and they had basically discovered how to do a computer chip that could run two lines of code simultaneously. And for those nerds in the room, like, oh, I know what chipset that is. For all the rest of us, I'd just like to point out that previous to this chipset, all sports games, the audience would have to run differently than the players. So, or the audience was just on a loop, but every once in a while the players would stop. So, or first person shooters really couldn't exist because you can't run things simultaneously. So these people made a huge breakthrough and they could not figure out how to tell people how they were excited about it. So we figured out how to do that and they ended up being a super famous and profitable chipset line for them. And that was really the birth, them inventing that chipset and then inexpensive, fast internet coming into everyone's house. That was the very beginning of basically modern gaming.
That's amazing.
It's cool to be there at the very beginning.
Yeah, I bet. With the knowledge that you have in the beverage category, and I've seen it firsthand when we were in Vegas for the WOMA Summit. I remember going to your room, your suite. It wasn't a room; it was a suite. And you had tequila and lime.
They're all suites in Vegas.
Yeah, that's true. But you had tequila and limes in the room to do fresh squeezed margaritas in your room. And I was like, this guy knows his shit. Like, you had the high-end stuff shipped in, you had the limes, you had the squeezer, you had it all down pat. And yeah, that may be why I lost this seat for president. I don't know.
I don't think that was it. I think it was a miscarriage of justice. But, you know, so that brings up an interesting point, David. I really do like a good cocktail.
Yeah.
And I personally don't mind sharing my knowledge with other people. So, but on the other hand, I'd be a lousy advocate for like phones because I literally don't care. I needed to play one video game that my son and I play when I'm traveling, which I haven't been for like almost a year now. I needed to make calls and I needed to do texts. I don't really needed to do much of anything else. And there's other people that read things on YouTube or watch things on YouTube and are involved in chat rooms and they know everything about it. I have one of those guys that works with me at my company. And when I've dropped my phone so much, it just doesn't want to work for me anymore. I just walk down the hall and I say, hey, Ron, what should I use next? And he's like, well, get a blah, 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 blah. And I just go do that. So that brings me back to advocates. So for all of you that are listening to this, a key thing to remember about advocates is an advocate will only truly advocate for three categories of information or fewer. Right? You won't, it just because I know a lot about soccer does not mean I know a lot about basketball. Right. Just because I know a lot about booze does not necessarily mean I know a lot about how to cook at home. Or I might know about liquor, but not about wine. So for all of you who are listening, when you're thinking about who my advocates are, thinking through like, okay, and not being and being very, very okay and very happy with going as niche as you want. And I'll give you an example, David. So years ago, a buddy of mine that I went to undergrad with got his first big command in the U.S. Marine Corps. Like he was running a base. And the tradition when you get your first base is everybody you know comes to the ceremony and they bring you a bottle of something. And I missed the ceremony because I just could not get out of whatever obligation I had, but I was a week late. So I'm in San Diego and I go and I find this bottle of tequila at this store. The guy says, this is great tequila. And I'm like, cool. Everyone else brought him wine or champagne. I'll bring tequila. He's a Marine, you know, blah, blah, blah. They'll like that. Mm-hmm. So I go and open up this bottle with him and I take the first taste and I'm like, oh my God, this is why people fight wars. I mean, it was so good. I'm like, this is a national treasure. What is this? And so it's this little guy who I've gotten to know very well at this point, but the brand is called Fortaleza. And for anybody who's left there who likes tequila, in my opinion, it is the best tequila that is widely available in the United States, bar none. And he has done an entire, not a client of ours. I'm just a friend of Guillermo's because I'm a fanboy of his work. Just like I'm a fanboy of Soren Johnson's video games and REM and Michael Stipe. I mean, I like your output. Please do more. And so for Guillermo, he has got this beautiful tequila, and one person has shared it with another, and they have told two friends and so on and so on. And it's probably the fastest growing tequila in the United States. He certainly spends his cost for customer acquisition is probably in the pennies as opposed to the tens of dollars, because it's one fan telling another fan. Now, you can also make money going the other way. When Ryan, what's his name? The Deadpool guy, he bought. Yeah. So he bought a gin called Aviation from some guys. It was really great gin long before he got involved with it. But you know, he's really funny and he's hilarious on Twitter and he does funny videos. And so, you know, he just sold it to Diageo like 2.5 years after he bought it for $610 million, including all of his earnout. So he's very busy doing his earnout, but everyone can go look at this publicly. So you can go both ways. The point is, if you're not Ryan Reynolds and you don't have millions of people that follow you, and you're not a smart aleck professionally, and you're not really seriously funny on the internet, you can still grow your business to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars just getting fans to tell everybody else. And quite honestly, Guillermo works way less hard than Ryan Reynolds does and all the rest of his team, because Guillermo's got 10,000 people across the United States every day who are like, dang, this is really good tequila. One day I should tell somebody about this.
And there's a focus on the product too. Yeah. You get to focus on the product. Right.
You get to focus on the product and you keep putting out, and people know you do good stuff. You keep doing good stuff. They tell other people about your good stuff. Boom. You make a bunch of money. And that's the power of word of mouth.
I'm a firm believer, Ted. And again, I really want to thank you for coming on. If you have not read his book yet, please go and buy Ted's book. It's called Fizz, Harness the Power of Word of Mouth Marketing to Drive Brand Growth. And you can follow Ted. You have a Twitter account. It's Ted Wright Media on Twitter, right?
It is. And then, but if you really want to have some fun, find me on LinkedIn. Because LinkedIn, I do not have a very good Twitter voice. Which, last point before you cut off, and maybe you can edit this out, but for those of you who are thinking about starting a business and you're thinking about social media, which is like super important and 100% big fan of it, I give you this one piece of advice. Pick a channel and be really good at it. Be good at LinkedIn, be good at TikTok, be good at Instagram, be good at Twitter. And don't worry if they're like, everyone used to be on Instagram and now they're on TikTok. Yeah, maybe. And 6 months from now, a year from now, they're going to be on something else. You be good at what you do. I have thousands of people that organically have followed me on LinkedIn. I have a little community that I've built just because it allows me to be a smart aleck and it allows me to, oh, look at this cool shit that David Benkowski's doing. You know, he's buying his house and he's living down there. And you guys, he knows more about Puerto Rico than all of us combined. So go talk to him about Puerto Rico. Right. And so for those of you who are thinking social media, my number one tip for all of our clients is pick a lane and be really good in that lane and let everything else just drop. People will find you. Quality will always surface.
Some great advice. Great advice. Well, Ted, thanks again for coming on, friend. It was nice talking to you again.
David, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And like I said, it's colada time when I get down there. So prepare yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.